why is this passage become such a controversial passage? Whenever we come to this, there's always fear and trepidation among those listening. And I think it's because of what we introduced last week was the S word. The S word being submission. When he begins, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. But I believe that word has been misunderstood, that we have a wrong understanding, and that our society has influenced the church in changing the meaning of that word from its original intent. So whenever we come to this, there are always ladies who feel like the pastor is dictating to them an inferior lifestyle when he preaches this, while the husbands perk up and, they're saying, preach it, preach it. And then we get to the next part, and then the wives kind of perk up when the preacher starts talking about husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And the wives are then the ones saying, preach it, preach it. And the husbands go away discouraged, and they're the ones who are ready to submit because they realize they can't do this. They can't do what they're being told to do. But, this is really not an us-them passage. It's not one against the other, but it has become that. This is not a competition to see who gets the upper hand in the marriage or in the family. This is about the gospel being played out in life. So we're going to look at this passage, and we're going to see several things, but what Paul is really going to say to us is that the key to a happy marriage is to properly fulfill the God-given roles of husband and wife. And there were, when I was working on this, we had 2 days of elders meetings at the beginning of the week, and then we got back Tuesday, and I was trying to have the outline all together by Thursday so that we could print it well and it would be ready to go, and we did that, and I had 2 points. One was the role of the wife. You'll see on the song sheet, one is role of the wife is to gladly affirm and follow the leadership of the husband. And the second was the role of the husband is to sacrificially love his wife as Christ loves the church. Pretty plain and pretty simple. But as I was reading this passage through again, I kept being hit by the role of the gospel. That this is really a passage about the gospel. That the reason wives don't submit to husbands, and the reasons husbands don't love wives as Christ loved the church, is that when we don't do those things, we are not believing the gospel. That everything we do comes down to our understanding of the gospel. Now, there's some in here who are not husbands or not wives, but the gospel is important to all of us. We don't, shouldn't say we don't, but we try at Providence Church, we try not to coerce people into doing things. Sometimes, unless there's, a discipline issue, and maybe someone hasn't been to church in a while, but we don't ask people to follow a lot of rules or a set of rules. And it's because we believe that when we believe the gospel, we will want to come to church. We will want to do the right things. We will want, wives will want to submit to husbands, and husbands will want to love wives as Christ loved the church. And it's about the gospel. And so the first question is really, do we believe the gospel? And so I made another point, and it's point number one. And I don't know if you take notes or not, but if you want to write something about point number one, you can do it in this top part. But the first point is that the role of the gospel in a marriage done God's way, which is the name of the sermon, is that the gospel plays an important role in a marriage done God's way. And as I was reading this, I saw this over and over. It begins in verse 23 when it calls Jesus the Savior. And then in verse 25, he says, God loved the church and he gave himself up for her that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. And I thought, that's just the gospel. This is a section of Ephesians where the marriage gives a picture of the gospel, and the gospel informs us what marriages should be like. It says, Christ loved us. And then at the beginning of chapter 5, verse 2, it says, and walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself for us. And in chapter 3, verse 19, beginning of verse 18, he says, in love may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge. 2 Corinthians 5:14 tells us that Christ's love compels us, that if one died for all, then all died, and those who died no longer live for themselves, but they live for the one who died for them. He loved us. And it's the Father who shares that love. In chapter 1, verse 4, he says, even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him, in love he predestined us for adoption. In chapter 2, verse 4, says this, but God, being rich in mercy because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive in Christ. That by the death of Christ, we were made alive. Christ sacrificed himself for us. He says he loved the church and gave himself up for us. Isaiah 53 talks about that. He died the most humiliating death he could to express that love. Isaiah said he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his wounds, we have been healed. He loved us. He sacrificed for us. Christ saved us. Ephesians 2, chapter 2, verse 5, which we just were looking at. Even when we're dead in our trespasses, he made us alive together. By grace, you have been saved. Verse 8 of the same chapter, for by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not of your own doing. It's a gift of God, not a result of works, so that no man can boast. He loved us. He sacrificed for us. He saved us. He sanctified us. He set us apart. He made us members of his body, of the church. He gives us gifts so that when we are using our gifts and of love, he gives us the power of personal growth and of helping others to grow. In chapter 4, verse 15, he says this. Verse 15. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, when we're exercising our gifts, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. He makes us his own. One day he will present us to himself. Christ will present us to himself at the end of time, and this is our hope. And our marriages and our families are a picture of this gospel. And that closeness of Christ is suggested in the way that God has designed marriage from the very beginning. He quotes Genesis 2, verse 24. He says, "Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." This mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. This is a mystery that points to the gospel, that Christ loves the church. It's about the gospel. John Piper said this, that marriage is meant by God to put the gospel reality on display in the world. That is why we are married. It's about portraying something true about Jesus Christ and the way he relates to his people. It's about showing in real life the glory of the gospel. So that when people look at our marriages, they say, "Why do you live this way? Why do you submit to your husband? Why do you love your wife this way?" And we can say, "It's because of the gospel. It's because of Christ. Let me tell you about Christ." If a marriage is bad, it's because we either do not believe or we have forgotten the gospel. So the very first thing we need to realize is the gospel plays a central role in marriage God's way. And then we begin in verse 22, that the role of the wife is to gladly affirm and follow the leadership of her husband. Paul has been talking about the church and how we live in the church, and now he's turning to talk to the individual families. And we ask why he does this. Well, he's explained the grace of God, and he's explained how we are to treat each other in the church, and he's explained how we're to walk as children of light. Now he's doing something that would be very logical for the Ephesians. This was something they would be very familiar with. This passage has become known among theologians as the family code. This is something that everyone in society would have been familiar with. And the idea is that the ideal society begins with the smallest unit in society. That if the home runs well, society will flourish. That's true of today, isn't it? Where have we come from? There was a time when there was this idea in the home of one home, one spouse, one job, one car, forever. That's not so anymore, is it? If you look at what has happened to our homes, we have gotten away from the model, marriage God's way, where it's hard to find that anymore. It's hard to find one spouse, one job, one car, one home. If the family runs well, society flourishes. This goes way back before Paul and the Ephesians. It goes back way to Aristotle. Aristotle said this, "Now it is clear that what are the component parts of the state to discuss household management, for every state is composed of households. To investigate everything should begin with the smallest parts, and the primary and smallest parts of the household are master and slave, husband and wife, father and children." That's exactly what Paul's talking about. You see, he's taking something from the Greco-Roman world and he's saying, "I want to make this Christian. You have an idea of what this is, but I'm going to tell you something else, that order in the household is important in society, but it is so much more important for a believer. Harmony was important for believers in the church. It began, and the churches became known as households, households of God. That when a household works well, society works well. When a household works well, when the micro household does well, the church does well. That's why we've had such an emphasis over the years of the family in Providence Church, because if the family does not function well, the church does not function well. And these families met in homes, which made it even more critical, and we do that with our life groups, that if there is a lack in the order of a household, it will affect the entire church. And I would submit that if there are problems in the church, many times that can be traced to problems in the family. So Paul is taking something that is familiar with them, and he is giving it a distinctly Christian definition. This would have been welcome by the wives of that time. You know, this is what Paul is saying to them. This is countercultural for them. That Paul makes Christ the example for both the husband and the wife, but especially the husband, as the husband is trying to figure out how he is to lead the home and have authority in the home. And Paul redefines the role of men in the home. It's no longer heavy-handed and oppressive. Rather, husbands are to look to Christ as the example. And he begins in chapter 22. Let's read verses 22 through 24. Let me read those. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Submission has gotten a bad rap recently over the years. And, you know, as I was thinking of this sermon, I read part of a book. Jacqueline and Carolina went to a ladies' conference a while back, and in our life group, she brought out this book. And I was reading this book one evening after our meetings at the elders' retreat. And Lori said, "What are you reading?" And I looked at the title of the book. It was "Becoming God's True Woman." I realized at that point that I don't go outside of the house with this book in my hand. If I'm reading this book in public, because especially with what's going on with transgender and everything else in society, I'm reading how to becoming God's true woman. Oh, the pastor, you know, he wants to go to the ladies' restroom or something. So I made sure I didn't take it out of the house. But I was reading this book because, you know, generally, when we talk about this subject, it is a man preaching to wives. And I wanted to see, what do women say about this? And there's a chapter in here called Liberated Through Submission. And I would recommend this book, husbands as well, but especially to the wives. And I didn't mark it up, so I'll give it back to you after the service. Lori teased me a little bit about that when I was reading this book. As a matter of fact, a couple days later, she asked me if I had learned how to become God's true woman yet. But in this book, the lady who wrote this chapter, her name is P. Bunny Wilson, and she is a teacher of women and an author, and this is a composition of a number of ladies in the church who have put this book together. But she talks about submission getting a bad rap. And there was another lady who wrote a book. It was number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list. It was called The Surrendered Wife. And this was a lady who wrote a book. She interviewed a bunch of men, and she came to find out that men, she said, "What do you want for your wife?" And the predominant answer was, "I want my wife to be happy." And she was taken aback by that, and she realized her husband wanted the same thing. So she decided just to surrender. And she said she gave every decision to her husband, all the finances, whatever movie we want to watch, wherever we want to go, my husband's going to make that decision. And she said her husband became this fantastic husband. And she got what she wanted, but did she really? Did she really? When she surrendered those things, did she really get it? Because surrender means to give up power to another. And only God is in that position where we give up power, we give up everything to God. Surrender is really a military term. They both are, actually. But when you talk about surrender, there's war going on. And someone loses. And the one who loses surrenders. They say, whatever. Whatever, I give up. And the lady who wrote this said, the lady who wrote the surrender book said, I would never submit to my husband because that's putting myself under someone. And the lady who wrote this said, if I went by her definitions, I would not do this either. But submission, when it's defined properly, is not weakness. It's not something that's to be avoided at all costs. It was commonly used referring to relationships, and we all have relationships of submission. If you have a boss, you submit to your boss. If your boss has a bad idea, you might give him options, but at the end of the day, he's making the call, and you're saying, okay, we're going to go your way. Submission, what is it not? Submission does not call for obedience to commands. Submission does not make the husband a boss and the wife a servant. Submission does not lead to loss of the wife's identity. Submission does not mean she loses her voice in family decisions. Submission does not mean that the husband is free to manipulate whatever decisions he wants made. Submission does not set her up for abuse, either emotional or verbal or physical. Submission is a voluntary action. And the basic idea, if you look up the definition, the basic idea is that women should not seek to assert themselves in the home in a way that could be viewed as ruling, controlling, or dominating. Rather, Paul is saying they acknowledge the God-given role of the husband as leader as he attempts to provide for his family. The way a wife responds is how she responds to Christ. The way she responds to Christ should inform the way that she responds to her husband. The interesting thing about verse 22, in the original Greek manuscript, there's no verb. It simply says, wives, to your husbands as to the Lord. Wives, to your husband as to the Lord. So in order to understand what verb goes in there, we have to go back. And what did Paul just say? He had just said, submitting to one another about reverence for Christ. And as you submit to each other in the church in reverence of Christ, wives, submit to your husband as to Christ. What was that all about, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ? It went back in the context to verse 18, where it says, and do not get drunk with wine that leads to debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. And then he lists five results of being filled with the Spirit, and one of those is submitting to one another. So wives, as you are filled with the Spirit, in the church we submit to one another, submit to your husband. Could be translated, continue to submit to your husband, or keep on submitting to your husband as to the Lord. It does not mean, by the way, that the husband is a lord to the wife as Christ is a lord. That I believe, is a bad understanding of that verse, because Christ is the ultimate authority. Matthew 10, 34 through 39, that we take up our cross to follow Christ. Christ is the ultimate authority. But how a wife views Christ and submits to Christ in the same way submits to her husband. So because the wife is a spirit-filled follower of Christ, she needs to react this way. And in verse 23, he says, "For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church." The husband is head of the wife as Christ is to the church. He is speaking about spiritual leadership in the home. That the husband is to be the spiritual leader in the home as Christ is to the church. He's not talking about a spiritual dictator. He's not talking about someone who has a final word on religious authority. That is the Bible. He is simply saying the husband needs to be the leader in the home. And as the church continues to yield to Christ, so the wife submits to the husband's leadership. This is not to say that the wife does whatever the husband says. It's not to say that Christ is the ultimate authority for every believer. But at the end of the day, we give decisions to God, or I should say God gives the husband the responsibility to lead the family and make the final decision for the family. It's not without input. It's not without discussion. It's not manipulation. But in the end of the day, Paul says the husband is to be the spiritual leader of the home. What about when your husband makes a mistake? You know, there are other relationships too of submission. Submission to elders in the church or the pastor. What about that? What about when they make a mistake? What is the attitude? Well, let me take you back to becoming God's true woman. There was a good statement in here on page 132 that says, the response of the wife, because I am a Christian, I submit to your decision. I believe God can lead you in the way you should go. I also believe if you make a mistake, God can fix it. Now, what can I do to help? An elder would love to hear those words. The pastor would love to hear those words. A husband would love to hear those words. Because that attitude, it's endearing. And the next time a wife gives an opinion or a member gives an opinion, there's great consideration for that opinion because the right to be heard has been earned. Submission is not a bad word. In fact, in this book, it said submission means God intervenes. Submission to the husband in everything, Paul says, in everything. As the church submits to Christ, this should be the normal attitude of a spirit-filled wife, affirming support, respect for the leadership of the husband, not holding back any area that you want to control, as you would do with Christ. Next thing he says is that the role of the husband is to sacrificially love his wife as Christ loved the church. The role of the husband is the head of the wife. We just read that. The role of leadership It doesn't tell us anything about how to model that or what it means, but the husband should be living out in the family, just as the other walks, just as it says, you are children of light, walk as children of light. Husbands, you are a leader, you're the spiritual leader in the home, walk as the spiritual leader in the home. Leadership means to guide by persuasion as opposed to commands or threats, according to the dictionary. It's often used a referring of leading someone by the hand and guiding them. And Paul defines this role based on how Christ serves the church. Christ provides everything the church needs. We read that in chapter 4. Christ provides a power and protection that the church needs. Husbands are to protect and to provide everything needed for the growth and the exercise of the spiritual gift of the wife. In Jesus' leadership, he modeled servant leadership. He washed the feet of the disciples. That is something in that culture that only slaves did. It was never done by a friend unless that friend was saying, I love you so much that I would be willing to be your slave. Christ washed their feet. Even in his position of leadership, he submitted and washed their feet. It didn't change his position. The leadership in marriage is to lead, not to boss or rule. To avoid self-centered demands, to meet the needs of the wife, to give opportunity for the wife to develop and use her spiritual gifts, to seek input for family decisions, to take initiative for reconciliation and conflict resolution, to concentrate on the role of being a husband rather than insisting on submission. Love your wife as Christ loved the church, verse 25. It's interesting, 47 words he says to the wife, 143 words he says to the husband. He counters the role of man in society. He uses the word love, he uses the word agape, that this should be the greatest feature of a husband's affection for the wife. It's a term of choice. It's an unconditional love. It's something that's not earned. Even while we were sinners, Christ died for us. There was nothing that we did to earn that. It doesn't mean that all men need to die. But it does mean that all men need to deny ourselves, whether that's in time or resources or self-gratification, sitting down at the computer and clicking on the wrong button. You know, in the Greco-Roman world and their family codes, the men were never told to love their wives. And Paul's saying, men, you need to love your wife as Christ loved the church. And he says, you need to love your wives as you love your own body. In the same way, verse 28, in the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church. Why? Because we are members of his body. Husbands should think of all the ways that he cares for his own body. Now, this doesn't seem quite as strong as love as Christ loved the church and gave himself for him, but this gives some very practical application to what Paul is saying. He nourishes and cherishes. He nourishes, often this word is used as a parent nourishes a child, or a bird cherishes or broods over the chicks. A husband is to treat his wife that way. Verse 31, he comes to the climax. Therefore, a man shall leave father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. 1 + 1 = 1. It's the new math. Leave your wife. The wife becomes the focus. It doesn't mean that we don't still honor our aging parents. It doesn't mean we don't take care of our aging parents, but it means that the wife becomes the focus. And we are to be glued to her. She'll leave his father and mother and hold fast. It's actually the word to be glued, to be bonded in a close, intimate relationship that includes emotional, physical, and spiritual aspects. Two will become one flesh. That also describes Christ and the church, that we are one flesh in Christ. And Paul says the fact that two people become one flesh is a profound mystery. It's relevant for the husband and wife, but it's even more important because it expresses the communion of Christ and the church, and that is a real mystery. Paul brings the argument back in very quickly in verse 33. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects the husband. Paul brings the argument back to the husband and wife, that each husband should love his wife in an intentional, caregiving way. And each wife should recognize and respond appropriately to the role of the husband. But it's interesting that these roles are to be performed regardless of the other role. In other words, each husband should love his wife in an intentional, caring way, whether or not the wife submits. And each wife should submit to her husband as Christ submitted to the church, as Christ sacrificed for the church, and the church submitted to Christ. Regardless of whether the husband sacrificially loves the wife. Paul says this is our proper obedience to God in the marriage relationship. Love and submission will always be imperfect in our world because we are imperfect. We are sinners. And as long as we're in the world, we deal with the flesh and we have the attacks of Satan, it's not going to be perfect. That does not mean that we stop doing our part. Paul is saying that the ideal happens when both husband and wife are filled with the Spirit, that our lives are characterized by the fruit of the Spirit. How do we do this? One thing we can do is this. When I get out of bed in the morning, when I wake up in the morning, first thing I have to do is I just sit on the edge of my bed and then I kind of stretch. Several years ago, I had a neck issue, so every morning I, make sure my neck is loose. I'm sitting on my bed. Some of you are stretching up right now. Your back's starting to hurt with this suggestion. But I stretch it, and then I'll stretch my back a little bit. So for a couple minutes there, before I get in the shower, I'm just, making sure I don't hurt myself getting out of bed. But what if we took that time, that 2 minutes, and we said, God, thank you for the gospel. Thank you for saving me. Thank you that when I was still a sinner, Christ died for me. Help me to live the gospel today. And then we say, today I make a commitment to love my wife as Christ loved the church. Or today, I make a commitment to submit to my husband from the example of Christ in my life, my submission to Christ. What would the result be if families in the church started doing that? First of all, there would be harmony in the family because that is God's way of marriage. Society would be affected. Church would be affected. love in the family would make it so easy to love in the church. Church would be what it is supposed to be. Not just showing up on Sunday morning and quickly heading out the door because the roast is on and it might burn. These are God's instructions through the Apostle Paul. The wives are to submit. And husbands, I don't know any wife who would not gladly submit if we love them as Christ loved the church. And husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. Don't let society take this teaching from us. This is instruction from Christ himself. Wives, submit to your husband as to the Lord. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. Let's pray together.